Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. And by Lantronics, maker of the X-Print server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, or Kindle Fire to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And by 99designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 300,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of All About Android, episode 165, recorded on Tuesday, June 10th, 2014. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell. It was the ghost introductions. Go ahead and say it, Ron.
I'm Ron Richards.
Okay, you're there in person. We heard you. That's good. Now you, Gina.
I'm Gina Trapani.
See, that went off without a hitch. This is what we call dancing. Before the show, we were like, we're going to make you dance. Here we go, right off the top. And it's okay, Brian. I forgive you.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. It's all right.
No, I've been taking it easy on Brian. After May got a little intense. Yep, and I kind of backed back. But now I'm wondering if I made the wrong decision.
Well, yeah. I think you need to give him another shot because I'm sure at some point today he's going to give us a nice camera shot of him hiding in the shadows and that'll win you over again.
Well, this is what happens when Ron's not in studio to like back me up.
You just get distracted. You don't really know how to deal with it. Exactly. You need my presence.
Personally, just the record, I'm grateful for the mute during the introduction because that's when I'm like guzzling beer and belching and, you know, coughing and sneezing. So thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
No problem, Gina.
Cool. We'll just do that from now on. We'll mute everybody at the top of the show and drink beer. I like your idea, actually, a lot. Let's introduce into the show Matteo Doni, who is the test engineer for Skyscanner. Matteo, it's great to have you on the show. You were in the studio a couple of weeks ago and we got to chatting and you told me kind of what you do for a living, and we're kind of like, hey, let's bring you on the show. It's a cool perspective. How are you doing today?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. We're going to talk to you here in a little bit about kind of what you do, you know, as relates to Android, but just real quick, you're a mobile web and mobile applications kind of testing engineer for Skyscanner. What is Skyscanner?
Skyscanner is a travel website. It's a global website that serves more than 30 languages around the world. Mm-hmm. It's best known for its flights meta search engine, but we also have a hotels comparison website, car hire comparison website, and a travel news and blog section. So Skyscanner is a relatively small tech company based in Edinburgh in Scotland. And we have been expanding very rapidly over the last few years, because growth has been impressive.
Yeah, particularly in the mobile space in the last couple of years, in your app, at least the Android app, looking on the Play Store, is doing fantastic. So bringing you on, obviously, to talk a little bit about hardware testing, we're going to get to that after a few news bits. But we also have Android's upcoming nearby feature, which kind of sounds interesting. Amazon's upcoming 3D phone announcement. I mean, complete with video of people going, wow, and holy cow. They didn't say holy cow, but they should have. Ron, if you were on that video, you probably would have said holy cow. $11,300 phone, details on the LG G Watch, and much more. But let's get right into the news, don't we? Might as well talk about distribution numbers right off the top, because that's how we like to start the show when we have them. The numbers are out. KitKat shows, actually, it's pretty almost doubled what it was last month. It's at 13.6% of all devices that were reported to Google in a 7-day period. That means Kit Kat and Gingerbread are nearly equal at this point, with Gingerbread at 14.9%. So, you know, 8 months later, Kit Kat 13.6%. I hope for the day where we have a release and like 3 months later it's at 13.6%, if not better. But I suppose we have a long ways to wait for something like that. Now, is it Chitika or Chitika? It's an online advertising network. I don't really know how to say it, but there you go. They posted a report where they say, based on their own data that's reporting to them, that Kit Kat comes in at around 37% of the devices that reported to them, with Jelly Bean at 47%, Gingerbread at 7%. Now, that's more like it. Although, obviously, this isn't coming from Google. This is coming from an independent online advertising network. They aren't getting any numbers from anyone that isn't using that network or checking in through their network. So there's that. And they claim, of course, the huge Kit Kat number is likely due to the Galaxy S series receiving its own updates in pretty much the past, you know, month or two. So all in all, Kit Kat finally making its way, kind of, just in time for another update to come along and kick it out of the front seat. What else is new?
I like how they present a large number and then immediately explain why it's that number.
Yeah. At least they know. Like, yes.
Yeah. It's like, hey, this Kit Kat number. Yeah, but it's probably because of this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the obvious solution there or reason there being that Samsung is just such a huge force in Android, and everyone, you know, knows of Samsung Galaxy S phones and they have them. And when Samsung pushes out an update to their OS, that's actually going to move numbers considerably on any of these percentage charts. So,
you know, there you have it. Looking at these numbers, like I was talking to my co-founder who is on iOS, and we were talking about rich notifications, which Apple just announced. And I was saying, you know, Android users have had this for such a long time. And he said, yeah, but not most Android users. Most Android users don't have it yet. And I was like, no, like Jelly Bean, you know, Jelly Bean and Kit Kat is basically over 70% of Android's user base at this point. And I realize looking at these numbers, I mean, we cover these numbers, you know, on this show all the time, but it feels like, you know, Google has effectively resolved the fragmentation problem. Most users, and Jelly Bean to me is a recent enough version of Android, between Play Services and the Jelly Bean Kit Kat coverage of, you know, more than 70%. It's just not an issue anymore. I don't feel like fragmentation is as much of an issue anymore.
Yeah.
I would say there's another thing to bear in mind. This is Google's data. Android is more than just the Google Android. The Android's sure. open source project is used by many, many different device and networks, devices and networks in Asia. And they don't use Google. They don't use Google services, so they're excluded from this data. So it may be just a Google services perspective mm-hmm. of yeah, the numbers.
Right. Absolutely,
right, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, particularly the Android distribution numbers, like you're saying that Google puts out, different from what Chitika put out. That's probably more of like a, you know, real world use case. You know, these people are hopping online and browsing, and this is what we report through our advertising network. Still usable, but they're obviously two very different numbers. But I think in combination, they kind of paint a better picture, which is, I think you're right, Gina, that not that fragmentation is necessarily entirely, you know, a thing of the past, but that it's getting better.
It feels largely resolved. You know, there's still more to
less
go,
of a headache.
But it seems like less of a thing now. And I feel like people talk about it less as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure. And I think, Play Services is a big reason for that, because you're not mm-hmm. waiting for the big, you know, point update to receive those new features and everything. They just kind of come to you, and you're like, oh wow, how's this new feature? That's pretty nifty. So, there you go. Cool. So what else about 4.4.3, Gina? What we got
here? Yes. Speaking of updates, an interesting piece on Ars Technica kind of goes along on the recent Android 4.4.3 rollout. That update went to Nexus devices, Play Edition devices, and Motorola devices all at the same time. The Ars Technica writer Andrew Cunningham says that the update seemed awfully coordinated and well-timed. It reached a large number of devices simultaneously, and this is better timed than really any other Android rollout in the past. He thinks this might be a precursor to the rumored Android Silver program we've talked about here on this show, and that Google's actively working on getting ahead of the update curve and influencing the playing field to move toward more timely updates for everyone, and that Play Edition devices could in fact just be, you know, batting practice for these improvements that would, you know, eventually go into Android Silver. Of course, the downside is likely always that carrier involvement slows down any updates for most phones. But keep in mind that Moto X still receives the update to 443, even on Verizon. So it's possible that folks will be getting updated a lot sooner, and that that this update that we saw here will become the rule rather than the exception. Have you guys gotten 4.4.3? I got it, I think, 2 days ago.
I did. I got it on my Nexus 5 probably like 5 days ago, and then I just got it on my 7 today.
I got it on my Nexus 5 5 hours ago.
It's interesting how those staged rollouts take place, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've yet to get it on my Nexus 7. I just checked for an update, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I have the M8 Google Play edition, and I got it sooner. So it does feel like, I mean, I think it depends on where you are and if you're connected to Wi-Fi and if you have a power source and whatever, but it is interesting. It does have to happen over several days, but go ahead, Matteo. Sorry.
No. I was just saying, I'm with Ron on that one. I just got the Nexus 5 update 5 hours ago. My Nexus 10 got it on the day before it actually hit the news, and the Nexus 7, both of them updated over the weekend.
I really wonder what the rollout thing, because like, for example, so like I bought my Nexus 5 from Google. So this is a Google Play Nexus 5, but I'm on T-Mobile's network. So I wonder like what is driving the update and why it took so long for me to get it. That'd be interesting. I don't know. But honestly, is there anything better than turning on your phone and seeing that little icon in the notification?
I know, right? It's like a little gift. It's waiting for you.
It's so great. It's so great.
I will say about that update on the Nexus 5, my complaints about autofocus, man, they kind of squashed that one. It works. I haven't really encountered the autofocus issues that I had been before the update. That's one thing that I've noticed about some of these updates, is particularly the small ones where it's like, oh, there's bug fixes and blah, blah, blah. You still want the update, and then you get it and you hope, please, that this one big thing that's been annoying you is going to get addressed. And then you realize over time, oh, maybe it's kind of addressed, but it's still totally there, or not at all. But at least in this case, that autofocus thing just was driving me absolutely bonkers. And I'm not really seeing that anymore on the Nexus 5. So that's good.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am too, because I take a lot of pictures of my phone. It was really annoying. So there we go.
All right. So on to the I.O. rumors. This one seems to be so credible that Android Police is saying that they're not even going to give it a rumor rating because it's practically certain.
Boom. Right?
So take that with a grain of salt. But Android Police is reporting that Google will soon introduce Nearby, which is an app to let other people, places, and things know when you're around. Basically, it will allow users to be tracked via location history in higher resolution ways than before by doing things like turning on the mic, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, etc., in an effort to direct when your device is in close proximity with another nearby device that you've chosen to be visible to. Not only that, it activates this functionality on all your devices, so it could come in handy when you, say, arrive at your home and you want your home automation to know about it. Android Police reminds us that the Android Wear video had a point where a girl was riding a bike and says to her watch, "Okay, Google, open garage," and this could be the thing that's kind of driving it. And what I find most interesting is that on the Android Police, if you scroll up a little, Brian, they kind of gave you the verbatim text from the onboarding screen. And I just want to read this so that this sinks in for everyone. Nearby lets you connect, share, and do more with people, places, and things near you. When Nearby is turned on for your account, Google can periodically turn on the mic, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and other similar features on all your current and future devices. Google Plus and other Google services need this access to help you connect, share, and more. When you turn on Nearby, you're also turning on location history for your account and location reporting for this device. Google needs these services to periodically store your location data for use by Nearby, other Google services, and more.
Just a little bit of extra stuff there.
Yeah, a little bit. What I love is that all of your current and future devices,
right?
Devices we don't even know yet are going to have this. This just, when I read this, it reminded me a lot of Google Latitude, which was purely just location reporting, which is like, this is where I am. And I remember that was like, what, 3-4 years ago, and I immediately turned that off. Mm-hmm. But this is that argument that we say, whereas, okay, this is really creepy because it's using your device to be kind of actively aware and using your location history and tracking. But then in return, you're able to connect with other people. You're able to connect with places. You're able to connect with devices. Is the loss of privacy worth the reward of what this opens up?
Right.
That's my question.
What do you think, Mateo? I'll toss this one over to you. Toss that softball your way. What do you think?
I'm going to sound like Jeff Jarvis here and say that I, for one, welcome our new Google overlords.
I don't think you're alone, at least for the people that listen and watch this show.
Obviously, this is going to sound creepy to people who are just reading the warning off the bat. But then when they realize that it's not giving them the services they expect from Android, things like the Android Stories, for example, if you turn location services off on your phone, you won't get those great services from Google, and you might say, oh, there's something wrong with my phone. Why isn't this doing what my friend's phone does? It will take a while for Google to educate its users and the Android users to turn this on and to not fear it,
right?
Because it can only bring good things. It can be mistreated, misused, but hopefully not.
Right, but so can everything. So can a knife. So can anything can be misused, you know. But like that video where, you know, okay, Google, open the garage door. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like when they start layering in the home automation stuff and the interacting with not only with places but with other devices and things like that. That's when I start to say, okay, cool, this is worth it. And the whole question is the layer of security that's in place to protect you and to protect your privacy. I'm okay with sharing it with Google as long as it doesn't go anywhere else.
Right. And this says that they do give you the controls so that you can make sure, like, if you're doing this kind of location sharing or nearby sharing, rather, you can determine, you know, who can notice when you're nearby and whatever. I use location reporting all the time. I've talked about it many times on this show. It's actually very handy to know when I'm going to start dinner, when my wife's on her way home, or vice versa. Comes in handy in those kinds of things, and I could see that. What I want to know is, what does turning on the mic do? Like, how does that improve this?
That's what jumped out at me from that bit of text. Like, oh, yeah. Turning on the mic periodically. Of course, tons of devices are always listening for commands or whatever. I mean, that's become pretty common.
Is but that what it reason, is? Always on, like always listening something or other? Well, is that probably why?
I think it's
it sounds
learning.
Like this comes on and off. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's taking what it's doing. Like, so for example, Google Now yesterday told me that there was a new episode of 24 on last night. How does it know I watched 24 unless it's listening? You know what I mean? Like, I haven't, maybe I searched for it a while back, but like, and there's also like, there's that new Google search functionality where you can, if you're watching a baseball game, you say, okay, Google, give me information or whatever, and it pulls up stats of the player that's batting. How does it know who the player is batting unless it's listening and picking up names or whatever? So I think the devices are listening. You're using that mic more and more to pick up those ambient stuff to enrich the data that we're getting back. But yeah, that's creepy as heck when you think about it.
Creepy just, good though, right? Creepy yeah, good. Yeah.
It just makes me feel like you can't really necessarily have a private, like a verbal conversation with someone in a room with the door closed isn't necessarily private, right? I mean, I know I'm being really super paranoid and Jeff and Leo would take me apart on Twig, but like, I don't know. I just think it's important. I get that this would do some really cool stuff, would give you really smart information, make you a lot smarter about who's nearby and what's going on. But I also just wonder about the whole turning on the mic every once in a while, the location tracking. It just makes me feel a little like ooky, you know.
Yeah.
Like Google's really gonna have to prove that the convenience so far outweighs your privacy concerns that you absolutely have to have this. And they do that in a lot of ways. I just, and you know, Now is awesome. So we'll see. But yeah, it creeps me out a little bit.
Just to check, Gina, Jason, you're both Glass users. Are there similar functionalities already in Glass that are being tested and played out with?
You mean as far as like I'm standing next to somebody and I'm wearing Glass, so it notifies me that person's here, or who they are, that sort of thing?
Yes, either as a third-party app or something built into Glass.
Well, just to take a step back and preface it, I have Glass. I don't really use it a whole lot. So I wouldn't say I'm like a regular Glass user, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask the question. I do think that there are companies that are working on things like this, but I don't know if it's totally as fleshed out as what you're seeing here, as automatic, like you're in a room standing next to somebody and, you know, it'll recognize that you're next to their device and then connect the two of you instantly. There probably is somebody working on it. I feel like, you know, I vaguely remember hearing something on Tech News Today, another show that I produce where we talked about some apps that do similar things to this. But it really does sound like what Google's doing here is kind of taking your location services and amping it up, you know, ramping it up to a higher level. And I'm not sure that Glass is doing that yet, but well, you better believe if this becomes something that they're doing in their devices and Glass continues to be a dominant part of their plans, then this will probably become something that gets rolled into Glass as well.
Well, in the Android Police article, they kind of tie back some of the previous acquisitions that could have led to Nearby, where, you know, they say, remember when Google bought Bump? The service used bumping motion as well as location data to know when two devices want to interact. Google also acquired Slick Login in February, which can use audio, Bluetooth, and Wi-Fi to authenticate. Nearby would wrap up all these techniques without you even touching your device. So
to authenticate. So it is kind of going along that road, and then also, you know, the riding a bike, going home and saying, okay, Google, open my garage. Recognizes your particular voice for that command. Maybe that's what's going on here, right? The mic turns on to recognize your voice and know that it's you making the command. Now your device is next to the garage, so it opens up. Who knows? We're all guessing here, but that could actually be it.
According right to Android Police, we'll definitely find out at I/O. So there you go. It's right. Certainty.
Not too long. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
No kidding. Not too long at all. It's really right around the corner.
Yeah.
We're going to blink, and then we're going to be seeing all sorts of LG G watches walking around. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Jason, I told you it's Guatch. Guatch. Not G-Watch, it's Guatch.
All right.
I am going to totally spearhead the takedown.
The Guatch movement.
Entire marketing campaign is going to be Guatch.
The Guatch takedown.
And LG's
going to. You invited me to I/O.
Yeah, right. LG's going to have to accept it that everybody's calling it Guatch going forward. Let's take a few minutes and talk with Matteo a little bit about kind of what you do for Skyscanner. Now, you're a test engineer. When I talked to you in the studio here a few weeks ago, you were just kind of telling me a little bit, sharing with me just briefly about kind of the trials and tribulations of being a test engineer, specifically, at least as relates to this show. You know, Android, we were talking a little bit ago about the whole fragmentation issue. There's just a million different ways that manufacturers can spin their devices, and you know, creators of apps have to create apps that hopefully work perfectly on all those devices, which it kind of sounds like that's part of what you do for Skyscanner. Could you explain that process a little bit?
Sure. Android's an incredibly large, wide, and complex ecosystem. There are lots of players involved, both from the hardware and the software side. And there's always the quiet stakeholder, which is the mobile networks, if they're connecting through cellular connectivity. So for us as an app developer and publisher, it's a great challenge to try and deliver the quality that we expect from ourselves and we're sure our users expect from us. We want to deliver that quality across the board to as many devices as possible. And so we have to go through a selection process and decide what the priorities are, how to hedge our risk and try and deliver the best quality product after having tested on a small subsection of what the market is. So we have to initially come up with a strategy. I work within a team of really great people where we work together both as a team and with other teams of developers, both internal and external. We come up with a strategy, and part of it involves automation. Once we've got that wrapped up, we also do manual testing, exploratory testing, things that you can't think of in a spreadsheet, but a tester will instinctively go and look at and try and break or try and do on a certain type of device. We know that the coverage within the company and within our partners is very, very limited. So we try and reduce the risk by then going out with the company and testing using two different things. One thing is called crowd testing. So we contact an agency or a company who gets in touch with lots of users and testers around the world, and we send them dev builds. They test what we give them as a scope, as a plan, and they give us feedback and report bugs. We can then go and fix those or decide what to do with those and move on from there. And there's also something called cloud testing, where some companies provide, say, a selection of devices connected to machinery in a lab. We can upload our dev build of the application and automated test scripts and run those tests in the lab to get even more feedback.
That's interesting. So cloud testing, in essence, is kind of this place where you can send your APK or send your app, and it will run on a number of different devices for you and then report back to you what works and what doesn't?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
So essentially, we develop the automated test scripts in-house. We upload our binary or our APK file to this lab, which then deploys it to hundreds of devices. Our automated test scripts run on them, and at any given point in the run of the test, or if something happens, it takes a screenshot, gives us the report, the stack trace, and we can then investigate and find out why what has happened has happened. So it's a lot of investigative work goes on after the test has been run, but during the actual testing, sometimes it's run overnight, so it's all done through automation.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, this is it's a blend. We're using crowds testing, so lots of people around the world who are reporting bugs to us through the crowd testing agency. The cloud testing and what we do in-house, all blended together, will hopefully give us the best coverage we can find.
Yeah, that kind of answers one of my questions, which was how many devices you run your tests on. So really, at this point, it's kind of between cloud and just crowd testing. It's pretty much an unlimited amount, which is, I suppose, as a developer of apps on Android, is kind of what you want. You want to cover as many bases as possible. What are there any recurring variables that tend to lead to incompatibility throughout devices, like say a camera functionality or just something that's kind of tricky that all devices tend to do very differently that's really hard to work around?
When dealing with widgets, we've noticed that certain customized overlays on top of the Android operating system, mainly launchers, can sometimes affect how our widget works, how it's displayed, how text is truncated or handled. So things, for example, you'd think a manufacturer like Motorola, who used to have a customized launcher before Google took over, that launcher would affect the way our widget worked. Mm-hmm. And sometimes other elements within the application would be affected by things like font settings in the app or language settings. So it's difficult to find one particular thing, but there's often more than one reason for things not working on a device. Sometimes it's the network itself. It's the type of connectivity the user has. And not only through testing, but also listening to our users, getting feedback and trying to understand the cause of the problem is a good way to try and constantly improve our application.
Sure.
Here at Skyscanner, one of our company values is quite simple. It's your mother uses Skyscanner. In that sense that we want our mother's approval and we want her to be proud of the fact of what we do here. And on that vein, I hope Cyanogen Mom uses Skyscanner at the moment.
Cyanogen Mom, yes, I'm sure. Cyanogen Mom, man, she was nagging me the other day, and she's like, I totally use the Skyscanner app. You need to use it, Jason. I was like, all right, Cyanogen Mom. So I think you're good there. Gina, did you have a question?
Yeah.
Stop talking.
I'm curious to know what tools you all use to automate your tests. Is it an enterprise tool, or is it something that a smaller company or an indie developer could use? Because I think test driven development, particularly for Android, particularly for smaller developers, is really difficult. I mean, I think test driven development is I build my APK, I test it on the one phone I have and maybe a friend's, I push it to the Play Store, I look at comments, and then I try to fix, right? Which doesn't present the most highest quality product. What tool do you use to automate your tests?
Well, there are lots of different tests throughout the application. So all the way from your unit tests on the code itself, up to integration tests, and then further up, UI tests. We're still investigating all possible avenues in that, because UI testing is very, very difficult from an automation point of view.
Yeah, that was my question about UI tests. Yeah, like press tap this button, okay, tap this link, scripting a set of actions a user might take and, what happens. I know that is difficult, and I actually haven't been able to find a tool that I like to do it myself.
There are lots of tools out there. Currently, one of the most popular ones, I'm not exactly sure which applications within Skyscanner are using it, is a tool called Qcumber, where you write your test scripts and they run on the GUI on Android. And that can also be, in a way, coordinated or replicated. You write your test scripts once, and using similar tools on iOS, you can have your one test case that runs both on iOS and Android. But that involves a lot of code-level development. So as the app's being developed, you need to write your hooks in for those test scripts to run on top of the app.
You really have to write your app with tests in mind as you're doing it, right?
Yes, and especially when coming into a project where maybe the app's almost complete or it's just an iteration of an existing app, being able to go back and do that work is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. So we're still investigating. We're still looking to improve our automated tests. And automation is the way forward.
Definitely.
But it does involve a large amount of effort and time to do so.
Interesting. At what point do you say good enough? And you just kind of push out the update? Because I imagine with testing, you could pretty much, you're always going to have issues. You're always going to have bugs and things that are going to be incompatible for some. I mean, how do you draw that line?
Well, in the sort of situation we're in, the test engineers are never the ones to make that business critical decision.
Sure.
That's the product owner or the project manager's decision to make. Is it good enough? Does it fit in with the business's needs at the time? So it depends on the release. We're actually moving to a situation where we're going to be releasing our applications more often. So the more releases there are, the more chances there are of catching bugs and fixing them in a short amount of time rather than waiting for a longer release. It's seldom something that happens that you have a perfect release that you have no bugs on.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a backlog of bugs that you pull forward, that there's been a decision made. It's not that important. We do want to get our application out. If, for example, a product owner will come to us and say, we need to get this app out now, and we know that there's a critical issue that is a high risk to the business, we can push back. But in most cases, that's a product decision that the product owner makes.
Sure, sure. Fascinating perspective, and I think it's important for people to kind of know the nuts and bolts that goes on behind, because I think as users, particularly as users, we get an app, it doesn't work on our device, and our immediate, reaction is, bad developer. What happened here? You released an app that doesn't work on my device. But the reality is there are so many variables out there. And, sure, there are developers that don't do their kind of due process, their due diligence to check those things. But I think just the reality is it's pretty darn complicated to catch everything. And you got to do the best you can. It sounds like the folks at Skyscanner, it sounds like you guys have a great team, like a large enough team to be able to tackle this, you know, as opposed to, say, an indie developer, like you were saying, Gina. That's got to be such a challenge for someone that's like a one or two person team to even know, you know, when is okay to pull the trigger. I guess then you're just targeting the big devices and then moving on and seeing what you can tackle from there.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, there are also other avenues. For example, both Google Play and other app stores in the Android ecosystem offer beta channel testing. So
right.
Even an indie developer can push their app out as a beta to a select number of testers or volunteers who have registered and do testing that way. So if you're an indie developer, there are other avenues as well. And it's also important to remember that a lot of the tools for testing are free and open source. So if they don't satisfy your needs, you can modify them or get someone to modify them for you to satisfy those needs.
Awesome. Good advice. So Mateo, we're going to be seeing a lot more from Skyscanner a little bit later on in the show. And you're going to be joining us, obviously, for the rest of the show. So, but thank you for kind of talking about what you do. I think it's a great conversation to be had and good for people to hear just how much work goes on behind the scenes to make these apps run on our devices. So, cool stuff. Thank you. Let's take a quick moment and thank our first sponsor of today's episode. That would be Prosper. If you knew that in 72 hours you'd have $35,000 to cover your needs, whatever they may be, what would you do? Would you pay off your high-rate credit cards, start a business, do that home improvement project? You can fill out an easy online application. You just provide a few details and see a rate almost instantly online. Prosper offers low fixed rates, unsecured personal loans. It's no collateral required, and has multi-year terms available. I got a new house, needs a new heater, needs some landscaping, needs a kitchen remodel, maybe a couple of bathroom remodels. Oh, wait, am I talking about myself? Yes, I am. I know I could use something like this. Prosper is Silicon Valley's answer to personal loans. With Prosper's innovative peer-to-peer lending process, there are no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates, and you'll never set foot in a bank. Prosper has more than 2 million members, that's lenders and borrowers, and over $1 billion in funded loans. And it's peer-to-peer lending, so, you know, it's distributed funding of your loan. It's, you know, same type of peer-to-peer service kind of approach that you do with IAM or file sharing, whatever, applied to the financial world. Peers lending money to you thanks to Prosper. Just go to prosper.com/twit to check your rate instantly without affecting your credit score. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Just go to prosper.com/twit. That's a special site just for our viewers. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days. Receive a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Prosper.com is not affiliated with Amazon. For gift card details, visit prosper.com/twit. And we thank Prosper for their support of All About Android. All right, everyone, let's talk about some hardware.
Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon.
Amazon sent out a teaser to a device unveiling event that will be taking place on June 18th in Seattle, which of course happens to be the day right after next week's episode airs.
Yeah.
Because that's how it goes.
That's how it goes.
Amazon issued the invites using an application process that was for developers, media, and customers. Kind of neat, not just a press event. The invite came with a video of people reacting to something, clearly the new device, and saying things like, "It moved with me," and "Wow." Do you like my impression?
I love it.
So, of course, everyone expects this to be the unveiling of the Amazon phone that we've talked about previously, with its forefront-facing cameras that will track your head movement to simulate 3D on screen. TechCrunch says they've confirmed that it will be, and they've also shared information about the technology powering the face-sensing technology. Omron's Aocow Vision, I hope I pronounced that correctly, modified its head tracking tech to bring stereoscopic effects to the phone's LCD screen for things like accessing hidden side panels in the UI. So you can sort of gesture at the UI to navigate the interface. So, yeah. June 18th, next Wednesday, I guess that is.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about this? I have an opinion, but I want to hear what you guys think first.
Well, I want to hear your opinion.
I know.
All right. So look, I generally try to be a technology optimist, but I got to tell you, this sounds like it's got gimmick written all over it.
Yeah. But you saw the video, right?
Gimmick.
They wanted it right then and there. They were like, I have to wait for this?
I don't know. That video to me read like, ooh, novelty, not this is something I must have and can't live without.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm curious. I'm cautiously optimistic. And I'm not... Am I optimistic? I'm curious. Like, I want to see what it looks like and see. But I don't expect that it's going to be the kind of thing that you use it and you know, it's like suddenly seeing an HD screen and you can't go backwards. Like,
right.
I just don't think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be more like, another Samsung feature that's cool, that really plays well on stage, that they show it off. And or maybe actually it might not play well on stage, right? Because it's 3D. You kind of need to be there to see it. So watching even a video of a bunch of people reacting to it just makes you curious. It doesn't make you necessarily need to have it right now. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to it to see what new they can bring, but I'm not confident that it's necessarily the next frontier of mobile.
Yes.
I know. And what, Matteo, what do you think?
I'm actually looking forward to 3D page turning in the Kindle app.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. Okay.
So, just throwing that out there. I have no idea. I have no connection to Amazon whatsoever, but that would be a really cool 3D feature.
So when you turn the page, the page actually comes out of the screen at you instead of just doing the animated page flip, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Think of your email as you click send turning into a paper airplane in 3D and then flying off.
Those are some ideas, but then again, essential to the mobile experience or kind of neat little gimmick.
I think we need to note the time code of this episode of when you guys were ultra skeptical. And when we're doing the pre-IO show on the 24th, the world is going to be a different place after this presentation in Seattle because they're going to change the face of mobile. That's my prediction. I'm going way in the opposite direction. This is going to change everything.
Somebody has to. That way somebody wins.
There's a reason why it's happening before IO.
Yeah,
there's a reason why they're inviting customers and not just press and all this stuff. Like, this is going to be big. This is going to be big. I don't know.
I appreciate you. They need
Ron there to be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh
holy cow.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Listen. I will react like the best of them. Okay. I will.
Oh, we know, Ron. We know.
I mean, the bar was set pretty high for reaction videos, so those other people didn't look that entertained.
Oh, this video still cracks me up. I love it. I absolutely
love it.
I'm
never going to live it down, am I?
No, you never are. This is going years and years.
Talkie-talkie.
Yes, it's fantastic. Yeah. All right. And, of course, the internet is a wonderful place filled with people that love to take screenshots of videos and then blow them up to large size and go, hey, that's a phone, that's a tablet. So some people are looking at the video and there's this one shot, this is the Mashable link down at the very bottom, Brian. I think there's a screenshot where you see like the reflection in the glasses of something and everybody was like, it looks like more like a tablet than a phone. It's a tablet. And yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a phone, but I just love it when the internet like has a purpose, right? Like, let's take it and run with it.
We need to zoom in. Enhance.
Enhance.
Enhance. Enhance.
Enhance. Enhance. Warby Parker. Those are Warby Parker. It's confirmed.
You could definitely see a thumb there. Yeah. Must be a tablet. Yep.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
There you go.
Well, speaking of tablets and 3D.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Uh-huh.
Google's got a little device up their sleeve. They've taken the 3D technology in their Project Tango smartphone, and they've packaged it up into a tablet. Which is interesting. So we've got our first kind of mention of this is Google's going to be selling it for a little over $1,000, $1,024, which I got to wonder, Did they do that because it's a memory increment, 1024?
I have to imagine so.
Definitely.
Yeah, anyway. No, so for 1024, for $1,024, you can get a development kit. They can get creative people working on cool ideas for the hardware. Google is supposedly producing thousands of these tablets with the Project Tango technology within them. It's got a 7-inch display, NVIDIA Tegra K1, 4 gig of RAM, 128 gig of storage, and LTE, as well as all the multiple tracking cameras that go with Project Tango. So, yeah, so moving into the tablet world with the 3D stuff. What is with the 3D? Man, we just can't get enough of it, can we?
It's the future. It's the future.
It's the next dimension, Ron.
It really
is. Augmented reality games.
Yeah. That's what it's all leading to. It's all leading to gaming.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do with all this stuff. We're just going to play video games. No, seriously, I want to play 3D video games because it's a lot of fun. Cool stuff. So we now have the Project Tango tablet. And if you have just an extra $11,300 to spare for a phone, then Virtu brings the bling with the Virtu Signature Touch. $11,300 gets you a phone. Oh, the specs. Qualcomm Snapdragon 800, 2.3 quad gigahertz quad core CPU, 2 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of memory, 4.7 inch 1080p display. So it's actually spec'd pretty well. There's a dual LED flash on the back with a 13 megapixel camera. Tuned by the photography powerhouse Hasselblad. Did I say that right? I don't even know what that is, which I'm showing my ignorance with that one. Also, sound.
Sorry, I think they're the camera specialists who tuned all the and prepared all the cameras for the moon landings. So they're the same people who made the optics to those cameras. So they're really good.
Yeah, that's important information for me to know. I have heard, however, of Bang & Olufsen. The audio is tuned by Bang & Olufsen. So, I mean, just watching this video, like, it's a super slick-looking device, sure. I'm just amazed that anyone spends $11,000 on a smartphone.
Well, you know, I was sitting at home wondering, how can I spend this $11,000?
What could I do with $11,000?
What could I do with $11,000 that could fit in my pocket? And I was like, oh, wow, this virtually scratch-proof solid screen with Bang & Olufsen and Hasselblad.
Cool, I figured it out.
Yeah. You would think that for $11,000, you'd at least get a terabyte of storage somehow. Or, like, they figured it'd be some crazy metric that would make it amazing. But, yeah, it's
I follow the CEO of the Virtu on Twitter, Max Pogliani, and he is trying to make it clear you're not just buying the phone, you're buying the experience, so the luxury brand experience.
Right.
And you may have noticed it in the video. There's a red hardware button on the side. That is a hand-cut ruby. When you press that button, it calls your concierge. So the phone comes with a concierge service and free access to various sporting events, movies and theater tickets. It's more than just the phone. So you're buying yourself a ticket into the elite society of wherever you are.
Well put.
And the history of Virtu is actually very interesting. It's an offshoot of Nokia.
Okay.
They used to make very expensive S40 powered devices, and once they moved away from Nokia, they started making up their own phones, which are handmade out of leather and titanium and expensive materials. I secretly wish I had one. After all, I am the person who got a pleather Samsung Note 3, wasn't happy with it. And I don't know if you can see this. I got a mockadile, fake crocodile pack for the Note 3.
Well, Mateo,
do what you got to do.
Well, Mateo, clearly you need this phone to test on, right? I mean, you need to make sure it works, right? I mean, like, that's part of it. Can't you build a test case for this phone?
It's quite the write-off there, potentially.
I would love to have one, but if I go to my technical manager and say that, he says, well, would you like new devices for the whole next quarter, or would you like one phone?
Well, I mean, for this quarter, I'm willing to sacrifice. I'll take the phone, and then next quarter...
A quarter is only 3 months.
Right, exactly.
I mean, come on. You know, like if you time that, you can totally make that work.
I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a music video with people with lots of bling and this phone, right? Like it's, I don't know. Maybe we'll see it. We'll see it somewhere.
I don't know. I'm tempted, you guys. Pull out a second mortgage and get a phone. Yeah, I'll review it on the show. What?
Listen, I liquidated my 401k, but I got this phone, so it's kind of awesome.
I have something to show for it, at least for the next 2 years until it becomes outdated.
So would you like to go to the theater?
I know, that's so awesome. So, and then Matteo, actually, you kind of floated this idea, and we haven't had the Moto E on the show, really. We've talked about it a few times in a few episodes, but we haven't had an actual review of it. And you actually just posted a review to your site today. Your site is, what is it? Todoleo, todoleo.com. So you've been playing around with the Moto E. What do you think?
I love it. I've always been a fan of budget Android devices. That's where I think the sweet spot is. Motorola have really excelled in taking the successful recipe they had with the Moto G and moving it down a notch and making it even more affordable. So I really did like the Moto E. I'm going to keep it and use it as a primary device, mainly for running and for pocket casts. Mm-hmm. And what's really good about it is that it's got the same premium feel of the Moto G. You don't notice that the screen is lower resolution. It's a QHD screen. It is really, really responsive. In some ways, more responsive than my Samsung Galaxy S5.
Oh, wow.
And I'd say the only letdown on the device is the camera, which is really not good enough, and it doesn't have a front-facing camera.
No selfies. So, or groofies.
No selfies.
Yeah.
but more importantly, no Google Hangouts, no Skype video calling. But apart from that, it's a fantastic device. It has expandable memory, which means that you can pop in a 32 gigabytes micro SD card, set Pocket Casts and Google Play Music to store their content on the micro SD, and it just feels good to hold. It's difficult to describe that feel of in the hand. It's very, very similar to the Moto G and the Moto X. So in a world where phones are getting bigger and bigger, I think Motorola have a sweet spot product.
Wow. Yeah, and I mean it's just so inexpensive. $129 here in the States at least. Cool stuff. I love seeing what Motorola is doing to kind of push the boundary of the low and the mid-range devices. But
interestingly, this is a device sold on Tesco Mobile, MVNO here in the UK, and in the box it actually comes with two shells, one black one and one orangey red one. So they're pushing the accessories big time. Only downsides to what's in the retail packaging. There's no mains charger. It just comes with a micro USB cable.
Oh, so you have to buy a plug-in charger extra.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can see behind you that you probably have a stockpile of plug-in chargers. So for you, not as big an issue. But good to know. So that's the Moto E. Awesome stuff. I hope one day to see one kind of float through the studio here so I can take a look at it. But played with the Moto X, played with the Moto G, and both are fantastic. So excited to see the Moto E in person.
Speaking of the plug-in, the Vertu Signature comes with a power plant that they build next to your house to plug the phone in. So you don't need the brick. You just plug it in.
And employees to run it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
And the Russian pipeline.
Right, exactly. Clearly.
So shifting gears a little bit, Gina, what's going on with the Guach?
It's spreading. Yeah. It's working.
I'm trying.
There's some good news about the Guach. I'm really excited about this. A bunch of LG G Watch rumors around Android Wear. Okay, so I'll just knock through these. Motoko reports a rumor that the G Watch will be released on the 7th of July in the UK, and it'll cost less than the Gear 2 watch, which means under $200.
Wow.
Thumbs up on that.
Yeah.
Chinese phone leaker UpLeaks on Twitter supposedly leaked the G Watch's spec sheet, which lists a 36-hour standby time. respectable. And this is the one that makes me really happy. Android Authority says the LG G Watch is essentially a reference device for Android Wear and will not only be shown off at Google I.O., it will be a giveaway to I.O. attendees.
You get a watch. Yay. You get a watch.
I'm right here, guys. Come on.
Sorry, Ron.
Sorry, Ron. But yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah. Ron.
Motorola will also be showing off the Moto 360 at I.O. and another manufacturer supposedly will be showing up, perhaps Asus will be there as well. But I really, really hope that in 2 weeks we're all going to have the square, the sadly perhaps square Guatch on our wrists and be able to review it in person together. So very exciting.
Ron is not amused.
No.
How much is this? Does the Guatch have to be, you guys?
I don't know.
How much does it have to be?
I mean, if it's under $200, it's really not a bad price, I don't think.
It's a great price.
Yeah, that's
pretty. That's basically what it's got to be.
That's enticing, yeah. I would say.
Mm-hmm. I just want to know about the Moto 360 and the size of it. After those pictures we saw a couple of weeks ago,
I know.
I'm dying to know. I'm dying.
Some people have been saying that that's like a pre-production version, you know, for testing, and that's why it's a little thicker and everything. I don't know if that's true or not. So yes, I'm very curious too. It sounds like in a couple of weeks we're gonna have that answer.
It wasn't so much the thickness, it was the diameter.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
And I'm not even being lascivious. I mean, like, it was a big circle on your wrist. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. Mm.
So. We shall see.
Watch.
I need to move out the Samsung Gear 2 Neo and get a Guatch.
Have you been following along with all of the wearables and like are you all in on wearables right now or as far as the watches are concerned?
I'm actually just trying out the Gear 2 Neo. Mm-hmm. It's essentially just a notification extension and health tracker. I quite enjoy the experience, and Samsung have this particular device is running Tizen, but it speaks seamlessly with the Samsung S5 I have that's not running Cyanogen mod. So it does work. I enjoy being able to not take my phone out of my pocket and just check notifications on the watch.
Oh, yeah.
So, that
is
nice.
But then again, if the Google Now functionality is as good as it is on the phone on the watch without having to take your phone out, I think I might be all in on Android Wear.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I'm very curious about Android Wear, and it sounds like in a couple of weeks we are going to hear all about it. We aren't going to have to wait anymore to know whether our curiosity is worth it. So let's stay tuned for that. In the meantime, let's thank another sponsor of today's episode. That would be Lantronix and their XPrint server. Whether you're at home or the office, printing from an Android device, even Chromebooks, Kindle Fire, it can be a challenge, and if your printer isn't already cloud print enabled, well, you're out of luck. I know my printer is not cloud print enabled. It's not really enabled for anything, actually. Now it's broken. But before it was broken, all I could really do was send a print command from my printer to it, and it was pretty dumb. I need to get a new printer, apparently. But XPrint Server would actually kind of revive it if it worked. Cloud Print Edition is an easy to set up, easy-to-use solution for Google Cloud Print-enabled devices. It's not going to fix my broken printer, but it would make it print through the cloud if I connected it to this XPrint server. It allows wireless and mobile printing from Chromebook computers, Android phones, and tablets, even the Kindle Fire. And it works with a printer you already own, whether it's wired or wireless, USB or network. It's the first and only print server officially certified by Google for Google Cloud Print and Android printing. It prints to your existing printers. No need to buy a new one. It's compatible with more than 4,000 top brand printers. It's easy to use, automatic discovery, and setup of printers. You just open it up. You plug it in here. You got the Ethernet, the power. You just plug it right in and you print. Advanced configuration available via its web interface. One XPrint server, this is one XPrint server right here, supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited Android devices. You can see there that X actually shines a nice pretty red when it's plugged in and working. It allows your USB printers to be shared with users all over the network. It's great for your home, great for your office. It even works with large multifunction printers. And Cloud Print Edition is $149.95. It supports up to 10 network printers and 8 USB printers simultaneously. Pretty awesome. Visit xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. We've got a special offer. If you use the code TWIT, you can receive free shipping on your order. Remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit and at checkout, enter the code TWIT. Easy to remember. And we thank Lantronix for their XPrint server and for supporting All About Android. Thank you. All right. Let's get to apps. And yeah, we're running a little behind. All right. So you may have noticed some changes to Google Play on your Android device. Did you guys get the update?
Yes, I think so.
You're like, I didn't notice. Well,
you didn't notice anything.
Well, you will. So a few things here. First, if you didn't get the update, you can actually force an update, and it's kind of hidden. So it's kind of a little tip here that we can share with you. If you open the settings menu in your Google Play Store app, scroll all the way down and tap on the build version, that apparently hits the server and says, is there a new version? And if there is, you can get it. So if you hear about a Google Play Store update and you haven't received it to your device yet, that's all you got to do. Settings, scroll all the way down, tap on build version, and you'll get the new version. If you've done...
Mine says I'm up to date.
Well, excellent. You're up to date. Okay, so...
Yeah, me too.
With this latest update, you'll notice a big change in permissions. Permissions used to be this huge list of things that was ungainly.
Yes.
And now they've changed it so that basically what Google has done is they've trimmed 145 permissions down to around, I think, 13 groups. It makes it much easier on the eyes. You know, they've got little pictures that denote like these are permissions that have to do with the camera or, you know, other parts of the phone. Google's obviously trying to better organize the permissions so people actually pay attention to them. In doing so, though, potential for abuse apparently emerges here. So say a developer has a phone-related permission when you install the app. You say okay, so you accept the permission and you install. Now that permissions are grouped, if that developer adds a new permission from the phone category, you're not going to be prompted to review the changes on the app anymore. Which in the old version, if there was a change, new permission added, it wouldn't automatically update it, right? It would give you a little pop-up and say, actually, some permissions have changed here. Are you okay with this? Blah, blah, blah. Well, now they're all in groups. And if one item in a group is accepted, all items are accepted going forward in that group. So basically, XDA encourages users to deactivate automatic updates for the time being. And, of course, carefully examine permission changes because, I mean, what can happen here if you, Brian, there's a Reddit link down at the very bottom, and this is kind of a good visual representation of what could potentially happen. A developer initially rolls out that top block of permissions there in the app, and then if you scroll down, this could be in an update that what it blooms to, and you don't know. And, you know, You may be okay with some apps receiving your SMS and MMS. You might not be okay with other apps receiving that, but you're not going to be notified of that in the new kind of implementation of Play. So I don't know if this is something where Google's going to come around and pay attention to this. It does kind of sound like it could be abused, but then at the same time, I don't know if this is, you know, I don't want to be an alarmist about it, but it does sound. It does sound like something you should probably pay attention to at the very least. So there you go. But pretty pictures.
It's so funny. I got this update. I noticed the permission list looked different and nicer and grouped.
Yep.
So I didn't have to scroll down. I was like, oh, that's great. I can see all the permissions in one view. Yep. But I didn't know about this BS. This doesn't seem like an improvement.
Yeah.
I'm kind of annoyed about it. I don't like that at all.
And I think the 13th bucket is other. So, And I'm not sure. I was kind of reading into it, trying to find out if so basically you have these 12 or 13 groups that, you know, are like phone, camera, this, that, whatever. Anything that doesn't follow in those categories is other. And I'm curious to know if other works the way the other buckets do, in that if that catch all other list one item is in there and then somebody adds all the rest of them in the other, which could be a number of, you know, wide, far reaching things, if that still just kind of lets it through without asking you to recheck and reconfirm. So I don't know. Something to think about when you're. Yeah, I think the moral of the story here is we should all be better about reading our permissions. I know I'm one to talk because I'm really kind of bad at it, and I need to be better at it. But
no, you don't need to be better. The apps need to be better. This is the permissions framework. It stinks. It's used or hostile.
It's true.
Like it.
Okay,
it's
good point. Fault.
No one has time to look through to read through all this stuff. And there's no way to say like I want to use the app, but I don't want you to read my SMS messages. Just disable that feature. You know, there's
right.
And I get that puts the onus on developers and on Google, but that's how it should be. The onus should not be on users to like decode all this stuff. That's my rant. Sorry,
no, I love it. I'm so happy that you said that, Gina. Yeah. Because
I agree with Gina on that one.
Yeah. I mean, on iOS, correct me if I'm wrong, from what I understand about iOS is that these permissions are kind of, you grant permissions as you operate the app, right? So yes. Like if you are operating an app and, I mean, I'm guessing here, but you launch the camera, it says, do you give this app permission to use the camera going forward? And you say yes, and then you don't. It doesn't ask you anymore and it now has permission to do that. Is that right?
Yep. That's how it works.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, that sounds kind of good. Because then there's nice. No ambiguity, right? Then you know exactly what you're saying yes to.
Right. And you know, oh, this is why this app needs this. Because
right.
I'm trying to upload a photo, so it's asking for permission to, you know, to access my photos. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think iOS actually does this kind of better, even though they have their own problems with permissions. They're not as fine-grained as Android.
Sure.
And they've had their own problems, particularly like around contacts getting secretly uploaded and that kind of thing. So like not nobody's perfect. But I don't like this update. I'm gonna shake some trees when I get tired.
Yeah. Let's corner some people and talk to them.
I think you should interrupt the keynote.
They gave you pretty pictures.
I know, but pretty pictures. Come on. Categories with pretty pictures. Isn't that good enough anymore?
When Larry opens up the Q&A, instead of Scoble, yep. I'm going to have to tackle him, take him to the ground, and get in front of that mic so I can ask him about Android permission.
First thing, Larry, I just want to say thank you for the pretty pictures in the Play Store update. But... yeah, I want to see this. I'll be recording with my phone, and we'll upload it. It'll go viral.
I'll wear glasses. That'd be great. Yeah. So, last bit of app news. Are you done, Jason, with the,
yep.
with the Play Store stuff?
I think so.
Last bit of app news. Beloved media player VLC VideoLAN is getting Chromecast support. This is really good news. Getting Chromecast support on iOS, Android, Mac, Windows, and Linux. The iOS version is going to happen first. Which is kind of weird. VLC, open source, come on, where's the Android love? But the iOS is going to come out first, possibly as early as mid-July. There's no timing for Android or desktop support release yet, but the VLC main developer has said you will be able to cast from VLC. So I'm pretty happy about that. I got to say, I use MX Player more than I use VLC these days. Are you guys VLC users, or are you using another video player?
Not a mobile. Oh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm loyal MX Player. That mm-hmm. is what I live by on my tablet. Yeah,
I mean, but I'm VLC on the desktop. So
yeah, what about you, Mateo?
Yeah, I'm MX Player on Android, VLC on Linux at home. So
yeah. I mean, their support on Android hasn't been too broad. I mean, they really haven't paid close attention to their Android app. I think at least here in the United States, you can't get it through the Play Store. There's a geographical limitation on it, and they give you the APK through their site so you can sideload it. But you know, it's going to limit the amount of installs for people that are finding it through the Play Store. In that regard, they're obviously okay with that because it's kind of a beta at this point. So. But VLC is fantastic in every other implementation, so I would love for their app to be equally as good as it is on the desktop. So.
Yeah.
Yep. And Chromecast is an essential addition to an app like this, too. So.
Indeed.
Nowadays. Let's take a quick break. Oh, wait. No. Ron, you do it.
Yes. We're going to take a quick break and thank our sponsor from 99designs.com. And listen, you know, we're tech savvy. We're all on the internet. We all have our own websites. And, you know, if there's something that you want your visitors or your website to do, you got to make sure you tell them how and make it easy for them. It sounds obvious, but you'd be surprised how many sites don't follow these rules. Contests and giveaways, for example, should be easy to enter. And your primary preferred contact, whether it's email or phone or a brick and mortar store, should be prominent. Generally, the more a visitor must hunt to find something, the more likely they are to click away, which we don't want to see happen. So if you want to build your social media following, you also want to make it easy for visitors to find you on the most traffic-heavy sites like Facebook and Twitter. So whether you need an entire website design, mobile app design, social media design, or anything else, 99designs.com can help. The site will connect you with dozens of talented designers around the world who will compete to deliver you the best design. What if you could start your next design project today and have dozens of designs to choose from in just 7 days? Well, with 99 Designs, you can. Visit 99designs.com/AAA and get a $99 power pack of services for free. A power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in the 99 Designs marketplace, and you'll get nearly twice as many designs. So go to 99designs.com/AAA and get started on your project today. And seriously, you're going to be blown away at how the creative, talented people that will be there working for you. So 99designs.com/AAA, and we thank them for their support of All About Android.
Boom. Love 99 Designs.
So good.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. I've got some designs on winning the Android Arena.
Oh.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
I'm not sure that one worked very well, but whatever. Well, I'm sticking to it.
If you look at the latest poll results from last week, you can stick to it.
Oh, man. Now, this one really came down to the wire.
Super. I mean, it was bouncing all day today.
Yeah. AC display, all right, came out on top. 49% of the votes with Karateka, or Karateka, as I always want to say. Karateka Classic at 45%. Man, such a great game. And Instagram, I kind of figured that was probably going to score low. Definitely over the years that we've done this show, we've noticed that the really big, you know, no-duh apps, you know, the apps that everybody's heard of and installed and everything, you think they're going to perform really well because everybody has them. But truth be told, a lot of times the underdog ends up coming out on top. So Instagram was 6% of the vote. At the end there,
it was nice to see the functional app over the retro nostalgia game. Although I do have to say that I pulled out my phone. I was at the Giants game over the weekend, and I pulled out my phone to show a friend of mine who is a big tech nerd, and he freaked out over Karateka and played for it for about 2 innings.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, so
nice.
So good it'll pull you out of a baseball game when you're at the stadium.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Port of Karateka. So I'm happy you did it because I didn't even know it was out there. So cool stuff. Well, that means that you are starting off. Ron, what you got?
I have the app installed. All right. So this time I go in a different direction, away from games and more to travel and leisure. You know, another category of apps that I love are really well designed, kind of beautiful apps. And GoGoBot Travel Guide caught my eye recently, and I checked it out. And it is not only a super pretty app, but it is also super functional. Basically, for those of you who like to travel and like to bring your devices when you go on the road or go different places, and oftentimes if you're like me, you end up in a different city for work, and you don't know much about it. Well, GoGoBot Travel Guide kind of helps you out to find the best things about each city that you're in. When you start up the application, what you do is you kind of choose the different, they call them tribes, that you belong to. So you could be a foodie, or you could be an outdoorsy type, or into the nightlife, or into art and music. They have a whole bunch of different groupings of types of people that are all submitting information to GoGoBot to help give you better recommendations. It picks up your location, so it tells you where you are. And so if you need to look for, you know, hey, I want to look for something to do, I want to look for something to eat, give me suggestions. It pulls in all that information and gives it to you at the touch of a button. Or if you're going somewhere, you can just type in a location saying, hey, I'm going to Paris. Show me the great restaurants. Show me the different things to do there. So it's pretty neat. What's even cooler, though, is if you're planning a trip and you're the kind of aspirational kind of person, what you can do is you can use GoGoBot to share information with your friends and create a different itinerary and list of things to do that you want to do when you're in that area. So what you can do is you can look up different kind of adventures to go on, add it to your list,
and then share it with your friends and have, you know, have your different various friends kind of chime in as to what they want to do. So yeah, it's very, you know, very photo intensive, uses a lot of crowdsourced kind of data. I was looking through the information about San Francisco because that's where I was, and it actually had some really good recommendations and solid places that I would recommend to people. And I was looking at places in Europe and things like that. And it has a ton of different places for each of the cities that I looked in. So it's got the content. The key with this sort of thing is that it's got to have the content to pair with what you want to do to make it any sort of, you know, any sort of use or any sort of value to it. It appears as if GoGoBot has got that, as well as some great images and some great design. So yeah, so it's totally free in the Android store. And you know, it's great for whether you're at home and just looking for something new to do, or if you're looking for to take a trip and to find some place to go. It's got, you know, restaurants, it's got hotels. It helps you plan the trip from the beginning to end. Great map integration, integrates weather, all that fun stuff. So GoGoBot Travel Guide. There you go.
I love it. Great design.
Yeah, no, the
super
design
easy
is really
to use,
nice.
Super intuitive.
Yeah. That's what really got me was that how you know, it's giving a ton of information and with a really sleek kind of clean design that, you know, kind of pushes the whole Holo interface to the edges as far as it can go, but still retaining its own identity. So
looking at Le Burgundy in Paris, France, only $500-some-odd a night. No big deal. $560. Or what is that, 20? 20 of those equals a Vertu. So there you go.
Yeah. But then you can use the Vertu to book your hotel through the concierge.
That's true.
Service.
I wouldn't need to use this app anymore. I just hit the red sapphire button.
Brian, if you pull up the video again, if you go to about 55 seconds in, there's a great, it shows you how to use the kind of the to-do list or the kind of things that you want to do on a trip, which are pretty cool. So you find a location. And you just add it, and you add it to your trip, and there's your list of things you want to do. You can move them up, you can move it down. So, and then you can share it with your friends.
That's really cool. That's very nice.
So here's the sharing bit. So yeah,
I love it.
Cool.
So it's GoGoBot, all one word, and that is free in the Play Store. You can check that out. All right, so Gina, you are up next. What do you have? And I have it installed, so I'll show it off.
Sweet. So my pick this week is an app called Hanger, and it's a pretty simple app, but it helps me use my phone the way I normally do. So it does something really kind of straightforward and simple. It just takes the apps that you use the most and puts them in your notification shade. I've been kind of obsessing about the notification shade, particularly with the iOS announcements, and I realize how much I live in my notification shade. I've been watching a lot of Orange Is the New Black on Netflix, so I spend a lot of time sort of controlling it for the notification shade and rich notifications, and I'm always pulling down my shade. And I usually just keep a folder of apps that I use the most. I mean, because most of us only use very frequently, you know, a handful of apps, 6 to 12 apps maybe. And Hanger keeps track of what apps you use the most and puts them in your shade wherever you want them. By default, it's at the very top, but you can put them at the bottom of your shade. It's also got this widget that you can just put on your home screen and then it auto updates, you know, the apps that you use the most. It tracks stats on the apps that you use the most. And if you care about seeing charts, of the apps that you use the most. It's got lots of really nice appearance settings about the way that the icons show up in your shade and whether or not there's a divider and what the colors look like, your background color and the foreground color. But it basically just means that you don't have to keep icons, you know, on cluttering up your home screen. I've got a picture I really like on my home screen. I like to keep my home screen clear because I'm just weird and neurotic like that. And Hanger kind of lets you do that by just putting the apps that you use the most in the shade. Now, there's tons of other apps that do something similar. Some of them are very smart and say in the morning you normally use these apps. So when you're at this place, you normally use those apps. Hanger doesn't do that kind of stuff as far as I know. It's just the apps that you use the most. But that works for me because there really is only a handful of apps that I use the most. So it's free, super simple, well implemented, very customizable. Hanger.
Love it. Awesome stuff. And you can see right at the top there.
Yes, she said put three of them in there. I think you can do up to 7.
Right? Very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very
good.
Love it. Looks good.
Hangar.
hangar, as in like airport hangar.
Yeah. Not like coat hanger.
Right. Thank you.
There you go. So that is Hanger, and it is free as well in the Play Store. Check that out. And then Mateo, I think I know which app you're going to cover in the arena this week. And I have it installed, so go for it.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm bringing the app I've spent some time testing on in the last year or so. It's the current Skyscanner app. So this is our application for searching and comparing prices of flights. And it will then allow you to book the flights through your phone. So basically, once you get to the end of what we call a funnel, you choose where you're going from to. We also have a fly to anywhere or to a city or to a country, and then it shows you prices for those places. You can choose any day, and it will show you a chart view of the prices of flights. And it's just a good way to compare flight prices and then easily book them on your mobile device. So this is our chart view. You can select your prices according to the date and then move forward from there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your from.
It's expensive for me to go to Honolulu, apparently. That's too bad.
We do have another feature, which is through our social channel and the website, which it can give you price alerts for. So if you say you want to fly from San Francisco to Honolulu, they'll keep an eye on prices and send you weekly updates to let you know if prices have changed. So, yes, we have tab view.
That is awesome, Mateo. That is a functionality that I need in a lot of my travel stuff, because you're looking for the best time to buy a flight, and that's great.
Excellent. We're doing lots of R&D regarding being able to try and predict what prices will be like, but that's still maybe a few years off. We'll see what happens with that. Now, this is specifically the Android app. Now, we are aware that a lot of people might not be comfortable booking an expensive flight on their Android phone or tablet. So we also have a social function, what we call a social function or a login function. So once you've got to the end, you can maybe save things. If you log in, you can either register for a Skyscanner account or use Facebook to log in and then log in on our website. So say you can be sitting on the bus looking for flights for your next holiday, maybe daydreaming. If you're logged into the app, that will then give you the facility when you get home to log in on your desktop computer or on your iPad, and your recent searches will all be synchronized. So for planning holidays, might be a good little thing. So yes, there's your recent searches. If you had your iPad there, Jason.
Oh, my iPad, be able to, yes. Sorry, I don't.
You'd be able to. You don't have one. or on your desktop, you could log in on the desktop, see those recent flights, and maybe book them from your desktop if you prefer to.
Awesome.
And there's all the usual sharing functionality. The great thing about Android is that you get to share to more than just to any app in your system that supports
it.
So you could even copy the URL onto a clipboard and email it, or go through with the booking elsewhere. So that's our Skyscanner flights app. We currently also have a car hire app in the Play Store, and there's more to come.
Fantastic. Very well designed, and some really great utility for tracking travel and everything. I really like it. I like it a lot.
Great, thank you. All credit to our design team. There is going to be, later in the year, a big refresh. We're going for a big refresh of the Android app, which will be exciting.
Excellent. So that is Skyscanner Flights, and you can check that out on the Play Store as well. Mine, I'm just going to show real quick. Did anybody remember Shuffle Puck Cafe from a long, long time ago? I had it on my black and white monochrome screen Macintosh back in the day. And, you know, it's a Shuffle Puck game. This is called Shuffle Puck Cantina, and it is free in the Play Store. So I will forewarn you that there are opportunities for in-app purchases that are, you know, unnecessary, essentially. So if you want, you can kind of upgrade faster through that or not. But basically, you know, it's your standard kind of Shufflepuck Cafe. I'm not sure if it's an official kind of evolution of Shufflepuck Cafe or if it's just kind of inspired by. But it kind of goes a little deeper than that ever did. You've got a few different modes. You can, you know, kind of bet, so you can kind of collect more coins based on your tournament. Survival. There's duel, which I'll just kind of go in right now. And you can kind of get power-ups over a period of time as well. Now, I have this on the tablet, so I haven't really built up much at this point, but I wanted the tablet for the larger screen because I have noticed on the phone the bottom area where you drag around in, it's not an immersive mode compatible game yet. I hope that they roll that out soon. So if you're not careful, your finger can run into those bottom screens. On the phone, it would happen to me every once in a while. So keep that in mind. But here, you know, it's... Oh, okay. Well, that was a little too easy, I think. anyways, it's a lot of fun. It just reminded me of when I was a kid on my Mac playing Shufflepuck Cafe. And it's, I don't know, it's just a good, quick game to get in there, play a little Shufflepuck, and, you know, collect coins with power-ups and all that kind of stuff. And as you progress, of course, there you go. That looks familiar. Oh, man, it was so much fun. And with the mouse, I mean, it just moved super quick. I mean, games would kind of fly on the old version. So I think this is a pretty good, faithful kind of update to it. And if you liked that game, you'll probably like this one, too. So check it out. It's Shufflepuck Cantina. And, whoa, dude's got a lot of hair. His name is Biff. I don't remember Biff, but there you go. All right, Shufflepuck Cantina. It's free in the Play Store. 4 awesome free apps this week. There you go. All right, you can vote for your favorite app this week by going to AAApoll.com/165. That's AAApoll.com/165. And we'll take a look real quick before we end here and see who is leading. Well, it's early. votes are still coming in, so we'll see where this lands. But it looks like Shufflepuck and Sky Scanner and Hangar are kind of close to the top. GoGoBot, man, they're all really great apps, so I wouldn't be surprised if this changes entirely by next week. There you go.
You got this week, Jason.
I'm not sure that I do. Really? I don't know.
I must say, on the AMOLED screen on both the Note 3 and the S5, the Shufflepuck Cantina looks awesome.
Oh.
The AMOLED screen really gives the colors some punch.
Pops. Excellent. That's why people love those AMOLED screens. They crank it up. So that is it for this week. Matteo Doni, it was a pleasure having you on the show today. Really appreciate you coming on and bringing your unique perspective to everything, from a testing standpoint and everything else. It's fantastic having you on today.
Great. Thanks for having me. I really, really enjoyed being on the show.
Yeah.
I've been a listener for a long time.
Oh, right on. I love that.
Awesome.
Yeah, tell people where they can find your reviews. You do a lot of reviews through your site. Where can people find your work online?
Yeah, so my personal blog, hosted on Blogger, is www.todoleo.com. That's my personal blog. You can also find me on Google+ and Twitter. My Twitter handle is @todoleo. As well as that, I occasionally participate in the Modaco forums. I used to be a news writer for Paul O'Brien. And I also participate in the UK Android community. I'll just take advantage of this to plug March of the Droids. March of the Droids is an Android enthusiast, tinker, and developer conference, which gets organized by Gary Weldon and his Motley crew. And it's been running for 3 years. I delivered a talk this year, again, on mobile application testing. And it's just a great event. So if any of you are on holiday next year when March of the Droids on, it's a good laugh. Come along.
Fantastic.
Not just for the Android stuff. It's a great social event, too.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Well, thank you once again, Matteo. And we'll invite you back soon. We'll have you on very soon to kind of talk about what you're testing on lately and all that kind of stuff. So thanks again.
Great. Thanks.
You bet. Ron, what's up with you?
What's new in Ron world?
Eh, not too much. Just getting ready to not go to Google I.O. if you want to find out what's going on with me on a daily basis, go to about.me/RonXO, and you can find links to my Twitter and Google Plus, where I'm google.com/+RonRichards. As well as Instagram and all that fun stuff. And by day, I'm over at imagecomics.com helping to make the comic books. So if you like the comic books, go there. You get some good stuff. So, yeah.
Good stuff it is. Excellent stuff, sir. Thank you. By the way, you know, not all hope is not lost, Ron. Somebody in the chat room earlier was saying, hey, I just got an email that said, hey, we opened up a few more invites to I.O. So it could happen.
Never know. I should go check my my email to see if they invited me. I saw someone on Twitter, I guess Verge was giving away a slot to go to Google I.O. You'd still have to pay, but it was, they were doing like a lottery to get a slot. And it was, I'm like, no. I'm sorry. If at I this was point, a developer, yeah, I mean, right. If I had a reason to expense it or whatever, but sure. At this point, it's a gimme for me to go.
Completely. Yeah. Well, still hope to see you there. And what about you, Gina? What you working on?
I am working on ThinkUp. That's right, my company and my product. We just actually pushed our brand new, homepage, thinkup.com. Kind of explains what it is a little bit more. Insights into your Twitter and Facebook activity. Ron and Jason both have awesome ThinkUps, ronxo.thinkup.com, raygun01.thinkup.com. And we're actually hard at work right now at a free trial. So if it looks kind of interesting, but you're not sure you want to pay yet, wait till right after Google I.O.
And you'll
be able to try it out for free. And I also co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, and that airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. So you should come on by and watch me and Jeff and Leo talk about all things Google with a little bit of Android. We leave the Android to this show mostly, but, you know, once in a while it comes
up. It gets in there every once in a while. Cool stuff. Love ThinkUp. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you.
And Brian.
Huh?
What about you?
Oh,
man sitting in the dark.
That's right. If you want to be able to see my face at any point in time, which I don't know why you would, but you could watch me on Know How with Padre every Thursday. We do crazy projects like streaming video games from your PC to another one on your TV in your living room.
Crazy!
It's crazy blow your mind stuff, maker things. And of course, if you follow me on Google Plus, you will see a plethora of corgi videos, motorcycle things, and you know, that sort of stuff when I'm not messing up this show.
You did fine. You only messed up like 5 or 10 times. It's okay.
Well, I know Ron has high standards. So
he does. Impossibly high standards.
Listen, Chad's shoes are very big to fill, and I'm not quite convinced yet. That's all I'm saying.
It's going to take forever, Brian.
Yeah. It's very big shoes.
He does. He has like clown feet. You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell. You can follow my musical exploits at yellowgoldmusic.com. I'm actually working on an album of Misfits cover songs with a couple of friends of mine that's about to go into mastering. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
It's been a blast. So that's coming sometime soon, probably this summer at some point. And then I have a new show launching this Friday, Android App Arena. Definitely it's an extension of the arena segment from this show. And it's just taking a deep dive look into a lot of apps. We're interviewing developer Chris Lacey, who developed Link Bubble, which is a pretty awesome mobile first kind of mobile browser experience. So he's going to be on this Friday. So if you want to check out the live playback of the pre-recorded versions of the show, as well as the live interview and kind of just me sitting there talking with you guys about all the apps, go to live.twit.tv on Friday. That's June 11th, Friday the 13th. Or sorry, June 13th, Friday the 13th at 1 p.m. Pacific. And I'll be there, and we'll launch this show, Android App Arena, coming this Friday. And if you're subscribed, you can go to twit.tv/arena. You can subscribe there. If you're subscribed, you'll get it magically. So there you go. But that is it for All About Android. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email by hitting us at aaa@twit.tv. You can also give us a link to a video mail in that email, and we'd love to play it on the show. We're on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're on Google Plus. We have a community there. Just search for All About Android. You'll find us. We have a subreddit, which is twitaaa.reddit.com. You can always find our show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes all over, like iTunes and YouTube and everything. And you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Oh, hey.
Oh, okay.
Where was that during the show, Brian? Come on.
We were running long. I didn't want to distract you guys.
Oh, man, that would have been gold.
Jason, can you just cut this back in?
Yeah, I'll figure something out.
Yeah, you edit it in, and we don't react to it at all.
Oh, I just beat the Gina boss. Now I gotta play the Ron boss. Oh, now I'm playing myself.
Your worst enemy.
Oh, now I'm playing Mateo. This is the best game ever.
I told you, goalkeeper.
You did. Yeah, that was awesome. You were a total goalkeeper. See, Brian.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, it's Brian again.
Next time we have a Shuffle Puck Cafe type game in the arena, you remember this, okay?
I know. Next time, for
all right.
Sure.
All right.
And I'll have like the breaking animation ready, too.
Oh, there we go. Yes.